very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here. 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host, Matt Barros. I may or may not have forgotten we were doing a show today. Just managed to dig it out at the nick of time. So I was sort of on time for Barros, who was looking at his watch and like, hey, come on, guys, let's go. But no, we must do a podcast. We must do an episode today because it is Tuesday, the afternoon after the 49ers second padded practice, back-to-back padded practices. Little tempers flaring just a little bit. It was hotter out there than it's been the last few days. Barros, you just wrote a piece which reminded me that we were doing a show. I have not read it. So what do you glean from today or just from the first two practices so far?
Yeah, I agree with you. It was hotter out there temperature-wise and hotter in spirit as well. And I liken that to the fact that this defense is just getting after it. They're very aggressive. And this is very much, I'm sure Robert Saleh is very happy with the effort and the intensity that he sees. Lots of thudding of ball carriers, lots of really, push from the defensive line, including some young guys. CJ West stood out again today in this camp. So I think it's, mostly the defense that's been taking it to the offense. I mean, it hasn't been totally one-sided. The offense has gotten its wins. The defense is strong in the front seven. It's weak in the back end because, they're missing Renardo Green and D'Amador Lenore. Lenore was out today. We still don't know why. But that coupled with the sort of the safety situation has kind of evened out the fact that the 49ers don't have all their receivers in camp. So anyway, like I said, I think from Robert Saleh's standpoint, he likes what he's seeing. It's challenging Kyle Shanahan's group, the offensive group, him and Clay Kubiak. So, from a competitive standpoint, from an energy standpoint, I think it's been a couple of really good days of padded practices.
Yeah, I'd just say the defense has so many young, talented guys. They'd better be maybe a little bit edgier, a little bit kind of, they got more to prove. Most of the big names are on offense, and some of them are practicing all the time, some of them are not. Obviously, Ayuk is out. Juwan Jennings is out. Some of the top guys aren't there for the offense. But you figure those young guys would be flying around a little bit. The rookies, the top picks, the Upton Stouts and the Nick Martins and, no Mikal Williams today. Ankle issue. I don't think it's serious, but he was impressive yesterday. And CJ West wasn't as impressive. I was watching, you don't always watch those, the pass rush drills. I was watching him again. West was really good yesterday. Like really, so shockingly good. I think today the offensive line was a little more geared up for him. They kind of stood up to him. He's not going to be, a finesse rusher. He's just in your chest and move you backwards. And if you're just focused on stopping, I think it's a little easier. I think that he surprised him yesterday, but he's in the middle of stuff on the team stuff. Like I'm still surprised. Like I think he's still running with the twos and often with the threes. And he feels like a one to me, like at least a rotational one, maybe essentially is, but he's not getting really any first team looks that I could tell. It's Givens. And so kind of the guys who've been there before. Elliott was in there. We'll see how that goes, but the young guys are the young, fast, aggressive guys are on defense in this training camp. There's no question. I'm going to be interested to see how that works out in the joint practice already. That's coming up now, right? That's a week from Thursday when they play the Broncos. Well, they play the Broncos in the exhibition game, and 2 days before that, they will have the joint practice in Santa Clara. Kind of really curious how that pitches out. The receiving thing is an issue, Barros. We could just say it's just right now, but there's more possible coming, right? Receivers get hurt. They're already short. Ayuk and now Jennings. We don't know how long that lasts. Cowing could be a while. Pearsall missed today. It's a two-on-one off. That's understandable, but you never know how long he's going to be out there. And you're just getting down to it. Who was the most talented receiver out there today, Barros? Like DeMarcus Robinson did not have a great practice today. He had some good practices before. He did not look great to me today. And I think Jordan Watkins might have been the lead dog out there today. Like, he was taking the first reps alongside Robinson. So he essentially was a starting receiver today.
Yeah, he got a nice compliment from Clay Kubiak, just from, you know, he stands out to everybody because he's one of the faster guys on this, on the team. But Kubiak was saying that he's been mentally prepared as well. He's somebody who was, you know, there for all of the spring drills, and he's been there for all of the summer practices so far. You know, back to what we say all the time, that, you know, it's related. If you're there for the spring, if you're taking part in all of the spring drills, chances are you're going to come out looking pretty good in the summer. And I think that's been borne out by Jordan Watkins, Upton Stout, of those rookie defensive linemen. CJ West, not coincidentally, was the only guy who was there, not injured at all in the spring. So that is sort of bearing out. But yeah, I would say Watkins was one of the standouts. The other standout is this guy, Russell Gage, and people will get to see him, you know, against the Broncos in the preseason. The book on him is that he had a patellar tendon tear in the 2023 training camp. He was with the Buccaneers. And, you know, everybody knows how bad ACLs are. Patella tendon tears are worse. They are often career enders. And I talked to Gage today, and he said, yeah, that was going through my mind, because he, during his rehab, he hits the plateau, and then you just can't get off that plateau. You can't get back to what you were, and that causes a lot of guys to retire. He eventually pushed through it. It took 2 years to do, but you saw him today, for example, in the red zone drill. He had a leaping catch.
That was amazing. That was a really nice catch.
Because we were being blocked, Tim, by the players, and yes. So you couldn't see anything. And then all of a sudden, you see Purdy let go of the ball, and then in the far corner, on the other side of all these behemoths that are standing in front of us, some guy just kind of rises up and snags the football. And that was Gage, Russell Gage. And he's known for his vertical leap. He had almost a 40-inch vertical coming out of the draft in 2018. Just underscores that patellar tendon is finally behind him. And the thing that Kubiak said about him was that he was a little slower in OTAs, but had picked things up to the point where he's really started to take off. And he has one really sensational catch of practice. He's been the most consistent veteran out there. And I'd say that Watkins has been the most consistent young guy out there. And so, I mean, if the season started tomorrow, they would be, you know, numbers 3 and 4 probably.
Russell Gage, is he the Chris Conley of this training camp?
That is a great call. He isn't quite as big as not as fast as Chris Conley was. I don't think you're going to see him on special teams, but he's a good route runner. He's a smart guy, and he's working out of the slot. I think he's a guy that quarterbacks really like to throw to because he's super consistent in where he is and how he gets open. And like I said, he's got this leaping ability. You can throw it to him in the corner of the end zone. He's going to go up higher than the DB probably. So I just think that he's becoming a trusted target for these wide receivers. And, you know, that's Watkins' challenge. Can he do what he does? He is fast. He is super smooth. He needs to kind of get that trust factor, just the reliability, runs the same route each time, that sort of thing. But I think it's coming, and I think that they're very happy with his progress so far. So sort of mixed news there. A lot of wide receivers are out. A lot of cornerbacks are out. So kind of hard to gauge that part of the practices right now.
Yeah, tough on the quarterbacks. I really thought I was watching a little bit of the one-on-one drills, receivers, and cornerbacks. And again, you said the top cornerbacks weren't all there, but there was not a lot of openings for the receivers. Like, the quarterbacks were just kind of throwing it. Like, you have to throw it, right? It's a one-on-one drill. You can't check off on that one. You better throw it. And they were essentially just throwing it to the back of the cornerback's head, hoping that he wasn't looking. It was not a lot of open space. Must say, though, Watkins with a, you know, the big deep play of the team drills from Purdy, where Purdy just heaved it as far as he could, probably 45 yards, 50 yards down, not as far as he could, but within that play. And Watkins made a hell of a play on the ball, over his shoulder, running past everybody. That was a bomb. That was a bomb down the middle of the field. Stuff that they have not done reliably over the last few years. We'll see if he can stay out there. I think he had to drop again. People may not want to hear this, but it is tough to see some of these plays. The way the field is configured, the configuration now, and the where they want us to stand, we have to move around. That's fine, but we often have to look through the other players standing on the field, and it's hard to see when they're, you know, 6 foot five guys are pretty large fellows, and we're having to try to look around them and try to see gaps between them. So it's hard to see. The details are not going to be as good. That's the way life is. Fans don't care. I'm sure Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch don't care, but there are going to be some drills where we just can't see very much. And like, I'd have no idea what cornerback was victimized in the Russell Gage play. No idea. It was impossible. We just saw 84 pop up and there was a DB there, but I can't tell you what number it was. It's very hard to see. But so, you know, hey, that's the way life goes. The 49ers were really good to see for many years, and maybe they're not going to be as good, and maybe I won't be there as much, but that's the way, you know, I understand that. I went because I could see these team drills really clearly. And if I can't, I probably won't be there as much. That's okay. And won't know the team as well. Hey, that's the way life goes. We'll figure out other ways to learn this team. Anything else? Anybody else you want to point out? Kicking? There was some kicking today. Again, hard to tell with our angle. It's always hard to tell an angle because we're on a side, so you don't really see. And the referees were there, and they didn't really bother to signal. I assume that meant it was going in every time. You know, I assume that's, but they weren't even really looking. Like, what are the referee officials doing there if they're not going to signal for it? I assume that each went 4 for 4. They all look good. The balls look good. I think Greg Joseph, I've been leaning this way, as you know. I think Greg Joseph is my bet on who's going to win this contest. We'll see how, and obviously we have to see how it plays out. But I think he kicks a pretty nice long ball. I mean, he's been known for that, kicking 50-yarders. Moody has a very strong leg. I'm not saying that he has looked bad, but I would thought that Moody's primary advantage would be the 50-yarders at 50-plus, and I think Joseph, in what I've seen, the ball looks, it comes off his foot very nicely on 50-yarders.
Yeah, what I do is, there's always a staffer who goes back there and is assigned to kind of catch the ball. There's no net in practice. So if that guy doesn't move off of his mark or moves very, a short distance, then that's usually good. If the guy's having to like hustle over from one side to the other, then it's probably a miss. So yeah, I think that both went 4 for 4, and that would mean that they're both 14 for 16 through four practices where they kick. They don't usually kick when the 49ers are on that far field. They don't want them kicking every day, I guess. That would be bad if one or both of them got hurt. It's tight so far. It's impossible to call. I thought that might be the case, and that it might come down to preseason games.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting that the final preseason game is in Las Vegas. Jake Moody has a very interesting history there. He missed, I think, all of his attempts there in the preseason 2 years ago when he was a rookie. And then, of course, played in the Super Bowl there, had some great kicks from 50-plus yards, in the spotlight kicks. Doesn't get any more pressure-filled than that. But then also missed an extra point in a game that went to overtime. So, wouldn't it be interesting if it comes down to that final preseason game and Jake Moody – gets called in at the end of the game to make a long kick to beat the hated Raiders in the preseason, but it would be something to watch, and something to watch in the second half of a preseason game. So there could be some drama this August.
I think I'm going. I wasn't going to go. I'm going to go. That, if it was going to come down to that, I got to document this one. I got to document the warm-ups for sure.
Yes.
The warm-ups.
Yes.
And absolutely, I got to document how that goes.
And body language and all that stuff.
It started in Vegas. It absolutely did. I think he hooked one left, if I remember correctly, in the preseason game, and then pushed one right as he was trying to correct that. And that's when things started getting a little askew. And I think he got, remember, he got dinged up a little bit in that preseason. And was he going to be healthy enough? They had another kicker there. If he kicks great in the preseason and including and finishes off in Vegas, then Jake Moody's very likely to keep this job. I just don't know if that's going to happen. And I think the pressure's on. It's very interesting to see. I might keep Brian. I might just keep Brian kickers. Barrow says kickers, kickers, kickers. That's what the public wants. And it was very interesting. We can see those at least. We can see those drills, yeah. Barrows. That's a pretty large step this season. We'll see. I don't want to complain. But if it sounds like we are seeing some of this stuff less clearly than before, it's because we are. We are not seeing these plays as clearly as we would.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why that needs to be. I mean, there does seem to be spaces for us to be, and we're just being kind of placed in the unenviable places. I'm hoping, I'm not going to raise a stink yet, but I'm not going to be, you were very uncharacteristically accepting of that just now. It's like, if that happens, that happens, but I'm not going to go down without a fight here.
Well, I will do it quietly. I'm not going to do it on the podcast is what I mean to say. I don't want to, people hate when the media whines. They would love to, be watching those practices. Yeah,
this affects them too.
No question. I will state that we see it less clearly. There's no question that we see it less clearly. I will happily talk about it to, through the right channels. I just don't want to be whining about it on a podcast. That's what I don't mind mentioning it. I just don't want to belabor that. If you want to belabor that, Barrows, please be my guest. I just want to make it clear. We are seeing it worse. There's no question about it. And, that makes our view and our knowledge less about this team. And it's what I love about training camp. I've said this before. What I love about training camp, it is open for the media, and we can see practice. We can see who's good, who's rising, who's struggling, who's getting it, who's not getting it. I think a lot of us would not really know at all why Trey Lance, that whole thing failed if we weren't at training camp. We saw it in training camp. He was not picking things up. We were all nice about it, and we didn't want to bang him, but this, in his second season, it was not happening. It was just not happening. He started the season, but then he got hurt, and he got pulled, and he never made it back because he wasn't very good. And a lot of that information is because we just saw it. So, well, we'll see how it goes. I just want to make sure people realize when we cannot identify players, if you get mad at me for not knowing who the cornerback was or who exactly was, running what route, it's because we can't see. And hopefully we will be able to maybe have better angles in the future. We'll see. Other than us complaining about that, Barrows, what else you got?
Point of being able to watch training camp and being able to relay information, it seems to me like there's always someone who jumps out and is having, the best camp of anybody. And 2 years ago, that was Brandon Ayuk. Looked very good every day of training camp, just very consistent, good, focused training camp. Last year, it was D'Amador Lenore, I thought, was the standout in training camp. And this year, way too soon to say who the winner is, but there are some contenders. And you touched on this on social media. I think Nick Bosa is is up there because, somebody at Nick Bosa's level, you might see him, play a few snaps here and there. He gets one or two reps in one-on-one drills. But he's been on the field quite a bit. Yep. And when he's on the field, Brock Purdy is tormented. And Brock Purdy isn't as good. And there's a clear relationship there. And Nick Bosa is beating Trent Williams a lot of the time. And Trent Williams yesterday had a big reaction after a move the ball period that was dominated by Nick Bosa, and the offense was thwarted by Nick Bosa. And Trent Williams came off the field and, was exasperated, like banged his thigh, and you could just tell that he was frustrated. I think that's, I think that's great for this team. I think that's going to push Trent Williams to get better and better throughout training camp, and he's going to be Trent Williams by the time that September rolls around. But, I hate to use the iron sharpens iron, but that's definitely happening in this camp. And so he's one of my candidates early on, and then D. Winters to me is another candidate. He makes a play every practice. And he makes it in the running game, and he makes it in the passing game, especially the passing game. I went over and I watched the linebackers against the running backs and the tight ends, and that's a tough call for a linebacker. One on one, there's nobody else there. You don't have any help. They lose 90% of the time. Fred Warner loses. Everybody loses. Well, Christian McCaffrey versus D. Winters today. D. Winters won that matchup. And it's not against Corey Kiner, the undrafted rookie. It's against Christian McCaffrey, who also has looked good, isn't getting a ton of snaps. So he's probably not going to win the award. I just want to say that right now, but it's not a reason.
D. Winters family, don't be prepared.
Yeah, exactly. Not a reason not to take him in your fantasy league. I think they're just doing it for preservation's sake. But so those two guys have stood out to me. C.J. West is standing out. Evan Anderson, you know, he's a
personal favorite. How could he not stand out?
He had the best rep in that one-on-one drill today where he just blasted. I think it was Connor Colby, the rookie guard, was on roller skates. And
That was impressive. That was very impressive.
And those two guys are cut from the same cloth, Evan Anderson and C.J. West. Same profile. They're not very tall. They're wide. They're powerful. They get underneath the opponent's pads, and they back these guys up. And so the step for both of them, this is what I guess it was Salo was saying yesterday, is that, okay, now you need to build on that power and get the, that quickness and the quick step and the footwork going, and then we're going to have something.
Surprised you were watching them. You're usually at that, that linebackers, running backs, tight ends. You're there, Salah's DBs versus receivers, and I'm offensive lineman versus DB. Like, we have this covered, us three, the big three, Salah, you, and me. I'll just say, noting Bosa, who was practicing, I couldn't believe how much 97 was out on the field in team drills. It was just flying around out there. And maybe it was a sign of it because early in the one-on-one drills, one-on-one rep versus McKivitz, beat him bad, took another, I think they were trying to double it up, and stumbled. So then he requested a third. You rarely see three straight reps, one guy versus the other, and it's Nick Bosa against Colton McKivitz, and that one was a tie. So McKivitz kind of, he hung in there against Nick Bosa when Bosa was really, really locked in today. So I think that's impressive by McKivitz. I think someone said, like, he's better. He's a better tackle right now, certainly, than he was 2 years ago, maybe better than he was last year. And it only helps you, as to the Bears always points out, you practice against the best, you're going to get better. You practice against Bosa, you're going to get better. Maybe you get beat by Bosa. So do a lot of people. Then just figure out how to stay in there with Nick Bosa. And this is the most I've seen Bosa practice, I think, in a training camp. It's early. Maybe he skips the rest of the way. I'm not sure. But I think he and Trent have gotten the message from, whether it's Kyle Shanahan or their position coaches or John Lynch, they kind of want these guys on the field more. Didn't have Trent at all last year, didn't have Bosa at all the year before because they signed so late in the respective years. They've also usually kind of gone one-on-one off maybe, right? It's two-on-one off now, two-on-one off. So you're practicing two-thirds of the time. And this time it was both padded practices, both of them. I don't know whether Bosa's two-on-one off. I know Trent's I've heard Trent's two-on-one off, and makes sense. That's a lot. That's a lot of practices. It's a lot of times going up against each other. I've written it and I've talked about it. Oh, this Trent versus Bosa, Trent versus Bosa. And sometimes we hardly ever get it in camp because they're just not practicing on the same day. Makes sense. You want to save the bullets. These guys don't have a million times they can take reps because you want them fresh in the season. But I think there's definitely a motivation to have the top line guys out there more this camp. They might get hurt. Maybe it's a bad thing, but so far it's been a very interesting thing. And I think it does lead you to, they know that their foot was off the pedal a little bit last year for a lot of different reasons, and they want it back down. They want to floor it right now.
I agree. Bosa was here in the spring. It goes to my spring theory. He's usually in Fort Lauderdale in OTAs with the blessing of the coaching staff and of John Lynch, because he's working out hard. He was here in the spring. I think that was partly to kind of set the tone for, he's the oldest member of the defensive line. And it's only by a matter of months over, I think, Jordan Elliott or a couple of guys, but he's the graybeard of that group. And so I think there's it's symbolic in a way that he wants to show that, you know, you got to be out there, you got to be delivering. I think he really likes Mykel Williams. I think he really likes the group that's in there now, and he sees the potential, and he realizes what his part is, what his role is in kind of seeing this through and squeezing the most out of this group. Whether it happens this year or next year, I don't know, but it begins now for sure. So, yeah, I think he's looked good. I thought Bryce Huff has looked good.
Yep.
You know, that turbo package of Bryce Huff on one side, Nick Bosa on the other, perhaps Mykel Williams rushing as a defensive tackle, and then one other guy. Maybe it's Kevin Givens. Maybe it's Alfred Collins. Maybe it's C.J. West. Maybe it's Evan Anderson.
But they really want to win. If they want to win, it's Evan
Anderson. Well, they don't want to really terrorize quarterbacks in this league, so they probably won't do that. But my point is that package is looking pretty slick right now. I think that's going to be a very strong package. And I think Huff's snaps will vary from game to game because of, you know, basically who they're lining up against. But they're going to have a lot of different waves of defensive linemen, a lot of different types of looks to bring in there. It's going to be hard to kind of pick. Let's say they want to keep 10. That's a huge number as it is, but even 10 is going to be a tough number to reach if everybody's healthy.
I think they really like Mykel Williams and the possibly Alfred Williams inside because they're just so big. It's so hard for the quarterbacks to throw through them. And I do think Mykel Williams is a more natural inside rusher right now. I threw that out there on social media and I thought people would get mad. They did not. I think people understand. He's not an edge rusher. He's an edge holder. He's a guy, you know, like I think of like Carlos Dansby or some of these other really super long guys. They get to the quarterback when they get to the quarterback. They're not like bending their back and slipping around them. It's more like they're using their arms to kind of leverage them, and then the quarterback runs into them. They get the sack. That's fine. Eric Armstead used to get sacks like that. But, you know, this is not Alden Smith. This is not, you know, Vaughn Williams. This is a really versatile kind of combination defensive lineman. And there's real value in that. And they haven't had somebody like that. Got to stay healthy, but I do think he's a natural inside rusher. I think that's what he is. And he's a natural 4-3, hold the edge, you know, long arm end on first and second down. And maybe he becomes an edge rusher at some point. I just don't think he is right now. He's not a guy you line up on the edge and go get 14 sacks. I just don't think that's the kind of player he is right now, but he's just a good player.
I got a question for you, and this is one we could have done if you were still team athletic, but yeah, you defected. Okay, more sacks for Mykel Williams in year one from lining up as a D end or lining up as a DT?
Do we have that count? Does that show up somewhere?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I would say as a DT. I'm going to guess as a DT, but we'll see. You know, let's see the preseason. Can you give me some practices to see where he's going to line up first, by the way? I think it's going to be as a DT where he's kind of getting that swim move, maybe, you know, some pressure on the quarterback. Quarterback kind of has to move away from Bosa, perhaps from Bryce Huff, and then kind of go the Buckner kind of sack. Where Buckner, I think Buckner would beat his guy more cleanly maybe than Armstead did. But he was kind of like, you know, that quick move and the quarterback has to duck somebody else and there's Buckner right there. And I think Mykel Williams might be more of that. I do think he's really talented. You could just hear it from the way they talk about him, right? I mean, I was asking you because I was writing about it yesterday. Like, when's the last time the 49ers had a draft pick that just, you are a starter? Like, you're, let's take Jake Moody out of it. That doesn't count. But you know, Pooney was a starter from day one, but that wasn't planned. You know, that wasn't right. Like
not they the were draft.
Yeah, yeah, they were talking about it. It wasn't OTAs. It just because it worked out that way. He was nobody went into camp thinking Dominic Pooney, that's the right guard. It kind of just developed that way. I was thinking maybe Javon Kinlaw, but you used to say maybe he was a backup early on. I don't quite remember. That was
2020.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Bosa in 19. It really might be Bosa in 19. McGlinchey in 18 would be the other obvious one who has just walked into a starting job. They haven't had many of these. It's just that that's the suffice to say. They just haven't had times when they go, this draft choice is a starter. Famously in the Moody draft, three drafts ago, they didn't think they could draft a starter, right? They're like, well, we can't draft a starter, so we might as well draft a kicker, right? They just didn't have the sense that the roster was so good. Maybe it was a little bit of arrogance. Like, we do not need a starter, so we're not even going to draft for a starter. And they needed it. And Mikael Williams, Sala was gushing about him yesterday. We've heard Trent Williams gush about him. Nick Bosa certainly is not, you know, he's praising him. Others, the way people are talking about him informs us that this, he's got respect in that locker room already. And that tells you something. This is a locker room full of stars, maybe fewer than they had in the past, but still stars. And they're, none of them are like, oh, this guy, let's see him do something. Like, they are accepting that this guy's a really good player.
Javon Kinlaw did start as a rookie.
Didn't
start much after that, though.
Yeah, he didn't play much after that. Well, they had traded Buckner, so they really needed somebody there.
Yeah, it was a desperation move at that point.
I was going to say the potential guy who was going to be the MVP of the camp before he got hurt was Juwan Jennings. Thought he looked fantastic. Was it two plus practices that he was in? Not with pads, but he just looked like a top line receiver. Like, he's like, I'm the best guy out here, and I'm going to show it. Now, let's see if he's healthy. Let's see with the contract. I don't know what's going to go on there. But before he got hurt and stopped practicing, I thought he was having a really great camp. Really.
Yeah. I mean, it's only July. There's time for him to get that title again. And boy, once he comes back to practice, he's far and away your number one.
Yep. Let's see. I think they're going to point guys now to that joint practice. They're going to want everyone in that one that they can get. So maybe they're going to back off some guys in between now and then, because that thing is going to be really important. And, that's important for the fields. It's important for everything. They turn these fields around in large part in order to have a real joint practice, because they just didn't feel they had enough space for it. And they were right. Let's see how the fields play out. Let's see how we can see any of this. I fear that, really fear that we're not going to be able to see much, but we'll see. And let's see who's practicing for both sides. I think they'd love for a lot of the people that we mentioned, other than, I guess, what Ayuk and Cowing and Mustafa probably will not be practicing. Maybe not Bart.
Renardo Green will be practicing.
Wow, even for that one.
Yeah, I think Shanahan said that's more mid-August that he comes back. So anybody who gets a hamstring strain from here on out, very unlikely that they play against Denver, practice or play against Denver. And then to me, I think they probably wouldn't play or practice against the Raiders either in that joint practice. The question is Jennings and this calf injury. How serious is it? Is it related at all to the contract that he's seeking? I don't think that's the case, but you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, what a stark contrast, what a argument that makes. Here he was, as you said, in those first four and a half practices, and he looked fantastic. And when he leaves, it underscores just how bereft this team is of top wide receivers. So if there's any argument to pay this guy and make him happy, it's what we're seeing in practice right now.
God, you sound like the Rosenhouses. Like, if you could have plotted this out, show
Rosenhouse
up.
Rosenhouse only takes 1%. I take 10%. 10.
The Barrow's 10%. Well worth it. Your dollars go, because he's so intimidating in these negotiations. So intimidating. Anything else you got? Her Clay Keep. I did not make it for the Clay Kubiak presser today, but this was his first kind of in-season presser as the offense coordinator. We know he's not calling the plays, but he is the offense coordinator in that Mike McDaniel role, which is, hey, the pressers are the biggest part of it, really. Like, that's the biggest thing that changes for him. I think you're out there, you're in public. I read the transcript, was not overly moved to think much about it. What did you think about Clay Kubiak?
He was better when he was in the media room, which meant that he wasn't on that, podium and didn't have all the cameras on him, and was more intimate when he spoke to us, I guess, either in late May or early June. He wasn't as good today. He used stack days. He's got a stack days, which we've been hearing for the last decade and a half. So anytime you hit the cliches multiple times, that's a bit of a demerit. But again, that was his first one. We'll see how familiar he gets. To me, that's the key. I mean, can you be like McDaniel was? Can you be funny and creative? Can you give interesting answers? None of the answers today were all that interesting. They were all basically the same. Yeah, he's doing great. He's just got to continue to stack days and everything's going to be great.
Clay Kubiak's got a not stack days like that.
if either of us uses the stack days quote in a story this year, we get a demerit for
that
sure.
That will not happen. That will not happen.
You have to be pretty desperate to
unless it's that. In sarcasm, I would imagine. I also got to point out, since I've been saying love for Robert Saleh to have more personality, kind of, you know, be looser up there. And I thought it was pretty loose yesterday. I thought his answers were good. I thought it was more like give and take. Like he was actually like thinking about the question and then giving an answer. As opposed, he was a very good defensive coordinator his first time around, so maybe fans don't care, but he was really tight up there as even into his third year as defensive coordinator. I do know that Kyle is an intimidating guy. Like, that's one thing you hear without question, even from Kyle. He's tough on his assistants, and the ones who get up there and speak publicly, if they say something that Kyle does not like, they hear about it immediately. So I get it. Steve Wilks was a little, you know, older guy and a more experienced. So he kind of was a little looser, but he didn't really know the system. And that became clear. So he wasn't that usable as a quote. And D'Amico Ryans, great coordinator, great guy. He just didn't feel free up there. Like he was almost unusable as a quote, which is too bad because he's pretty good now as a head coach. But again, yeah. I think he just felt like these first time coordinators, as maybe we're seeing with Clay Kubiak, they just aren't sure what they should say, and they fear saying the wrong thing. And who knows what it is with Kyle? You know, it could be the wrong detail about a player, or you emphasize the wrong thing. I don't know. Or maybe they're just worried about it and it isn't true. But Saleh's been a head coach. He's gone through the New York media. He's taken the Aaron Rodgers stuff. I just felt he was wooed by the 49ers. He's making twice as much as he did the first time around. He still could be a head coach. Like, just be up there and be in command of that podium. And I thought he was yesterday, and I liked it. I was impressed by it. I don't know how that goes with Kyle Shanahan, but I think he's fine with it. If you have it under control, you're fine. It's just if you say the wrong thing, or you emphasize, or you praise, or you criticize the wrong thing, maybe you hear about it. But that's good news for us. I complain about maybe the views on the field. I will not complain. I will praise a defense coordinator who we need, right? Because Kyle's not running the defense. The defensive coordinator is the one talking about why he's doing certain things and why certain players are rising or falling. Now, Kyle can speak to that. He is very great on all the details, but we don't get Kyle every day. And we want details specific to the defense. So if Saleh can rise up, like he was really good yesterday, then man, that's a thumbs up for us. And I think it's a thumbs up for fans because you're learning more about your defense if you're a 49ers fan when the defensive coordinator is thoughtful. Like, how much did you learn about the defense when Fangio was Harbaugh's coordinator? Like, you learned everything. It was like every detail because Vic Fangio didn't give a shit because Vic Fangio was running that defense. That's the good stuff for us because we learn things, you know. And then when Jim Tom Sula talks, we learn nothing. What we want to do is we want information. We want details. And if Robert Saleh is on that path, which it seems like he is, then I am very, very, very happy about that.
I learned from Tom Sula that you don't stick your spoon in someone else's soup. You stick to your own soup. You don't put your spoon in somebody else's soup. I learned a lot.
I was worried about when you guys – you don't stick your – look at –
I will sometimes run into D'Amico Ryans like at the combine or at a league meeting, and the warmest guy on the planet. We'll just chat for you know a couple of minutes off the record. Mm-hmm. Great stuff, and I always leave it thinking, why couldn't you have done that from the podium? It would have been so much better for us. I mean that all was happening behind the scenes, obviously. Because people have been just enamored with him since he was a high school player, but and knew that he was going to become a head coach because he has that charisma. He has that warmth. But boy, when he got up on that defensive coordinator podium, he didn't have it. But it also shows that he knew, like to your point, he knew where he was. Yeah. And he didn't have the ego where he had to like take over the stage, and he had to, he's able to kind of withhold it too, which I think is shows a lot of restraint.
Hey, don't be praising people for withholding. First of all,
I'm not praising. I'm just saying how he has a great personality.
It didn't hurt his career at all, obviously. But I think Mike McDaniel's colorful pressers actually got him a head coaching job because it made him stand out. It made him, wow, this guy is interesting. This guy can, you know, doesn't look like he can command a room, but that personality is going to be very interesting. And, you know, with Saleh, I just think that, you know, I've heard the same things about him, like D'Amico, like he's a great guy. Like people, that's the guy people really like in that room, at least his first tenure. Like Kyle, they're on tiptoes around. Saleh was the guy who I heard, like, you know, checked in, asked about your family with staffers and, you know, kind of was a connector. And we see it on the sidelines. We just never saw it at the podium. Like he knew things, like he knows me, like we run into each other. He knows me just from, I guess, questions or, you know, what I write, but I've just never felt like I had a conversation with him. And now I'm feeling like these pressers maybe are a little bit more like a conversation, which again, only helps everybody, I think. So, well, Kyle will listen to this podcast and go, that's the end of that for Saleh. We're going to shut him
down. Shut him down.
Which is interesting because Kyle is so good at pressers. I should point that out. Kyle is fantastic with details and information. He can be a little, stubborn, or he can be a little fiery, but he will usually ask, if you ask him a direct detailed question, he'll give you a direct detailed answer, and that's all we ask for. And sometimes, remember when he was his first, he was like giving us formations and here's the read, and if the linebacker's going over here, you gotta go to, now he doesn't quite do that anymore, but it's close. And but he can do it because he's sure of himself, because there's nobody over him. That's why, I mean, literally, there's nobody to tell him. You can't say that. If he decides to say it. How often do we have those pressers with Lynch and Shanahan where we ask Lynch a question and then he gives a very, you know, general, because John can be, you know, very statesmanlike question. And then Kyle just says, no, he doesn't ask me. That's what, is Juwan Jennings asked to be traded? Well, we're not getting, we like Juwan. We, you know, Juwan likes us. And Kyle just says, no, he has not asked to be traded. And that's Kyle, because Kyle can do that because he's the top of the chain.
What disappointed me with Saleh is that he showed up yesterday and he had a lot of hair. You know, he had a lot of like dark, you know, thick hair. And I'm thinking, is he just being bald for the sake of being bald? Can he actually have hair on his head if he wanted to? That's like using a wheelchair for the fun of it. I mean, that's just a waste.
Oh, Barros. Only Barros can go down that road. That could be one of your questions to Barros, to Saleh next time.
That's if you decided to grow your hair out, how much coverage would you have?
Would you not have been fired in the New York Jets if you'd done that? All right, Barros. With that, with the Barros MVP question of is Saleh hiding the fact that he does have hair, we shall end it for today. We shall come back in a few days. I'm not sure. We shall see. I may be down there later this week. I may not. But maybe we'll have a really good show. We're hoping for one coming down the road. I'm not sure when that will be. I will not reveal it because we might not get it. But it would be great if we do. And otherwise, Barros will be just, you'll be out there. You'll be out there, watching it for all of us.
Reporting, yep.
That's what you do. You make it. I'm just saying, I kind of point to different things in a camp. Always the first pad of practice, first couple, which would last 2 days. And then I'm looking at this joint practice. It kind of just crescendos to that now. So we basically got a week. Obviously, they're going to have some practices. They're going to have some pad practice. But I think they're going to have maybe one in the next few days, scale back to make sure they're not worn down, make sure they're fresh for that August 7th practice at Santa Clara against, however you want to say it, joint practice with the Denver Broncos. I am very much looking forward to that. All right, Bows.
All right. Talk to you soon.
See you guys.